Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. We've got a great show for you. We're going to talk a little about soybean weed control, especially pre-emerge herbicides, and the three pre's in particular we'll get to today. Even if you don't raise soybeans, though, a lot of these same lessons apply to every crop, so you'll definitely want to tune in. As always, if you would like to send us an email, if you've got a question for us, anything you want us to talk about on the show, you can email us at radio@agphd.com or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. We are broadcasting from the Morton studio today, and when we talk about three pre's in soybeans, or just pre-emerge weed control in soybeans, I first like, Darren, to think about what I don't want to do. Okay, so the first thing I don't want to do is put a bunch of herbicides out that don't kill my weeds. So, for example, there are still herbicides today that contain ALS, pre-emerge weed killers, like Pursuit, for example. And it's a great product if I've got nightshade as my main weed.
Yeah, but, it does get a wide variety of weeds.
Yes,
I will give it that. But if you've got water hemp, if you've got Palmer
well, let's just
weed,
say that your main weeds are water hemp, mare's tail, and kochia. Will it kill any of those?
No, you're not going to get any of those main driver right. weeds. And I get it if you say, look, I don't have very much weed pressure at all, but I have a lot of different ones. Yeah, this could help you on some of those others. But if you say, put together a program for me that'll stop the weeds that are going to escape from me, which are the ALS and Roundup resistant weeds, like you just mentioned, a list of them there, then you have to do this. We've had shows recently talking about conventional soybeans, talking about Xtend or dicamba tolerant soybeans. And when we talk about Liberty Link soybeans, it's the same thing. We'll get some experts on, we'll get some farmers using those programs. Every single one of them, I mean, to a man, will say, we've got to get a great pre-emerge herbicide program or we can't make Liberty work. We've got to get a great pre-emerge program or we can't get dicamba to work. You know, today we're just talking about that pre-emerge program that's going to be used regardless of what your trait is. Even if you're raising conventional beans, probably especially if you're raising conventional beans, you've got to get awesome pre-emerge control because the easiest way and best way, most effective way to control weeds in soybeans is to kill them before they're up. And you can do that with herbicides that aren't going to ding up your soybeans like many of the post-emerge rescue type options will do. So you don't slow your beans down at all. You get them off to a great start. You get residual control. It's going to last for a good ways into the season. It's a win-win-win deal.
As soon as I start talking about three pre's, and I don't care what crop it is, a lot of farmers will say something to me like, Brian, I want to cut my costs. Now you want me to spend more on a pre-emerge herbicide. Look, what I want you to do is make the most money possible. And we know that if you have great weed control, then you have a much better chance to have great yield. The problem when we get to crops like soybeans is we don't have a lot of real good post-emerge options. Okay, look at Xtend beans. You can only use dicamba real early in the season. Roundup beans. Roundup doesn't kill the weeds. Liberty beans. Yep, Liberty will work if you spray when the weeds are small. Well, what happens if it rains for 2 weeks straight? Okay, well, all of a sudden, you're not killing all the weeds there. So my point is, we just don't have a lot of great options. When you get to corn, we have so many more options for these tough Roundup-resistant broadleaves as compared to soybeans. We just don't have them in soybeans. And the other thing is, these pre-emerge herbicides have really come down in price in the last 20 to 30 years. If you look at 20 or 30 years ago, we were paying more than we are today for Metribuzin, for Trifluralin, Valor and Authority, we didn't even have 30 years ago. But anyway, these are the products we're talking about. It doesn't have to cost that much money. In conventional tillage, I can do this for $12 to $14. That's it. If you say, oh, I have to go no-till, all right, you can switch over to Prowl. It's going to cost you a little bit more money. Now you'll spend $20 to $22 for three effective modes of action pre-emerge. But anyway, I want to come back to what I started with, and that's don't spend money on stuff that doesn't work. So there are a lot of companies out there that are trying to sell you premixes that contain a product that doesn't work on your target weed. Now, it might if it is your target, if that particular herbicide does kill your weed. So I started with Pursuit, and I bring it up because there are still some fields around the country that have black nightshade. All right, if you've got black nightshade, then fine. Have that Pursuit or ALS component in your pre. If you've got common ragweed that's not resistant to ALS, then fine. Have some first rate in your pre. But the reason why we talk about the three pre's that we do all the time, Metribuzin, a PPO, either Valor or Authority, and then one of the yellows, Trifluralin, Sonalin, or Prowl, is because all three of those are still effective on most of the Roundup-resistant weeds out there, including water hemp, Palmer pigweed, kochia, and I would even throw in there, Darren, lamb's quarters, although it's technically not a Roundup-resistant weed, but
it's
tough for Roundup to kill.
It is, and it's a tough one in the burn down, too. And here's one of the things that I'll talk to guests and say, well, I'm just going to do a burn down. I'm not going to do all those residuals. I'll do a burn down, and I'll come back early with whatever, a dicamba product in Xtend, and I'll be just fine. Please don't fool yourself with that. And the other thing with the burn down is if you've got broadleaf weeds that are up, it's tough to burn them down in the early spring. If you're planting your soybeans early, it's cool. And when weather is cool, those weeds that are up are going to be pretty difficult to get. And we also underestimate what we need for herbicide rates. I've seen too many, especially Roundup burn downs, just not work because we didn't use enough Roundup. It's, well, I use 16 ounces or even 22 ounces on some of these weeds. If they get a little bit of size to them, it's going to be tough. Now, looking at this next year, we got a lot of tillage that didn't get done in the fall that was intended to get done. So we're going to have some challenges in the spring with lots of residue to get through and those kinds of things. That's going to be the one question that comes up too, Brian, is what do I do with residue? Can I spray this on the residue and then till it in?
Yes, you can spray it on the residue. I'm not that worried about that. It goes through the
residue pretty
quick.
Just depends on how deep you're tilling in that residue. You know what I mean? If you're going to do some deep tillage, I would do that first.
Well, sure.
Then put the pre on and then do a finishing pass, something like that.
Yeah, but these products can be incorporated, absolutely. You could use them in no-till. Granted, with Trifluralin and Sonalin, you can't. But you definitely could use Prowl, Metribuzin, Valor, Authority. They could all be used in no-till, strip-till, whatever. So anyway, we've got a lot of options there. We're going to talk more about pre-emerge weed control in soybeans or really in any crop. If you want to email us, radio@agphd.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy Two Save Three are trademarks owned by AMVAC Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Are you frustrated with white mold showing up year after year in your soybeans? If you have tried fungicide applications and are still losing yield to white mold, now is the time to ask your seed dealer about Heads Up Plant Protectant. Heads Up is the first EPA-registered seed treatment for the prevention of white mold in soybeans and pulse crops. The first line of defense on your farm against white mold now starts with the right seed treatment package. Locate a Heads Up dealer near you by visiting headsupst.com today.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today, and we're talking about really one of our favorite topics, and the reason why it's such a favorite topic for us is because pre-emerge weed control in soybeans makes farmers money. It makes more yield in the soybean crop. It leaves less weed issues going forward. It's a big deal. Well, one other thing that's a big deal is marketing. And we've got Scott Harms with us right now with Grain PhD. Scott, how are you doing today?
Very good, Darren.
I almost hate to bring this up, but the corn market, it just hasn't been anything exciting to be watching lately. It's been pretty rough. But the demand for corn seems pretty strong. What's behind this recent interest in corn?
Corn market's been mired in kind of a steady downtrend really since the release of the USDA numbers earlier this month, which is kind of surprising given the strong fundamental picture. We actually, for one of our programs, lightened up on hedges earlier this week, took advantage of this week's weakness because we think we've gone at or below the bottom end of, you know, value based on, you know, fundamentals. But right now the corn market just can't find a friend. You know, there's none of these markets operate in a vacuum, and although we feel like the corn has a good story, it's being drugged lower by other markets. The crude oil market, it's been in a free fall for the last several weeks, and it probably was completed with an over $4 barrel drop on Friday. That pressured corn last week. Earlier this week, the soybean market was off 20 cents. That led to pressure in corn. And the wheat market, which is always closely tied to corn from a feed standpoint, has been doing it no favors as well. So, and you say that the corn demand is solid. I agree. You know, we're in the final week of the first quarter of this current marketing year, and corn export inspections are running 80% above a year ago. Now, admittedly, last year the first quarter export numbers were pretty pathetic, but still, nonetheless, you know, USDA is using a higher production export number, this year. And so far, there's no reason to think we can't reach it. And on the ethanol side, you know, we're off to a solid start there as well. We're using a slightly higher production number this year than that last year, and we're not that far off of that pace. In addition, you know, ethanol exports, which were a record last year, we're running 7% higher based on data from a couple months ago. So ethanol profit margins have been under pressure. That's part of the reason we've softened in corn as well, with the higher natural gas prices and the lower crude prices. But, you know, crude oil seems to now have found a little support. Natural gas prices, they had a blow-off high last week. They've backed off a little bit. Now we're hearing that DDG prices have rallied $10 in the last 2 weeks. So that's helping to push ethanol margins back into the black. And, you know, finally, we talk about feed usage. And the disappearance on feed usage really is only evaluated every time they give the quarterly stocks numbers, but we can only gauge it based on the livestock numbers, and livestock inventories are pretty high. So, I think the long-winded answer is yes, corn demand is solid. I guess I'll make one more point when we talk about the corn market. A year ago, corn prices a year ago were not far below where we're currently at, and we're talking about 800 million bushel less in carryover projection this year than last year. So, and in my opinion, that gap's going to even narrow up even, or excuse me, widen out even more as stocks fall. So we got to believe that we're near some short-term lows here in corn.
I sure hope so. I hope it bounces back soon. But one thing that we've been noticing is a firming of the cash market in corn in many locations. And I know you had mentioned that last week. I wonder if you have any further insight on that as to why, and if we're seeing the same thing happening in soybeans.
Yeah, cash corn prices have been firming over the last few weeks here in the Midwest. You know, when I saw that, my initial reaction was that perhaps the cash market knows more about the size of this year's crop than the futures market does. Although I do suspect that the USDA is going to cut their production number in the January report, talking to some grain contacts, and it kind of seems like it maybe is just as simple as the processors and the merchandisers, they overestimated the amount of corn coming to town. So they widened the basis out, anticipating there was going to be this big glut of corn coming to town, but on-farm storage picked up, you know, the rise of these grain storage bags also keeping some of that grain, you know, out of the pipeline. And then the dragging out of harvest that we saw the last month or so also keeping corn not necessarily coming to town as quickly as they had anticipated. So it might be just as simple. Now we've seen the basis firm up, getting back to probably more normal type levels where they are kind of historically. They were historically wide, probably artificially. Now we're getting back to, you know, where we probably should be. You know, but if this trend continues and they do continue to firm up the cash market, it does open the door for farmers to sell cash inventory and then re-own those sales and options if they choose. Volatilities and options are really low right now. It makes that a real attractive option. So as far as beans go, the interior basis levels have firmed in soybeans. So, you know, the merchandisers, the processors are bidding up, but the river locations, they continue to stay pretty weak. And, you know, unless there's, you know, if we get some kind of trade deal done, that certainly will change that.
Hey, you mentioned option volatility being low, and really with Grain PhD, getting education for growers and helping them think through these strategies is the big goal with the whole project. I'm just wondering, can you share more insight as to what low option volatility means and how that could help guide producers when it comes to buying or selling options?
Yeah, when we talk about volatility, it's implied volatility in these options, and it's really a reflection of the optimism that there's going to be some kind of big price move expected. So, you know, if the you know, the percent of the volatility, it's a one component of the cost of the option. So when you have lower volatility, the price of the option is going to be lower. When you have higher volatility, the price of the option is going to be a little higher. It's really about expectations. Right now we have low volatility, implied volatility in options, probably as low as it's been in years. And it's mainly because there's not a big expectation that there's going to be a big move coming. So a lot of times you'll see volatilities firm up leading into a USDA report because there's uncertainty of what that report's going to say. And then after it's released, you'll see those volatilities soften up again, especially if there's no major move anticipated or no major move after the report. So at the time when volatilities are low, it's a good time to buy options. A quick example, I was looking at the May 380 corn calls for people. You know, they're trading around 13 cents. The implied volatility is something like 15%. That's pretty low. A more normal implied volatility would be around 20, 25%. And the price of those options, instead of being 13 cents, if it was trading more normal vol, instead of trading 13 cents, it'd be trading around 20 cents. So it makes options more expensive the more volatility that there is in the market. And it's really, again, a lack of enthusiasm around the trade, but sometimes it's wise to zig when the market's zagging. So we're trying to take advantage and buy these lower volatilities and just wait and anticipate that there's something can happen down the road here.
Well, of course, the big thing that everybody's hoping happens is President Trump and the President of China get something worked out. And I know I've got a meeting coming up this week here between those two. So hopefully we'll have something to report on next week. Great information today, Scott. In the meantime, if someone wants to learn more about Grain PhD, including the free Grain Bridge software, which we've had recently had a webinar about that, how to utilize that software in your operation. Just check it all out at grainphd.com. Scott, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
All right. Have a great day.
All right. Yeah, a lot of stuff going on in the markets. And, you know, the big thing here, and we talk about this a lot, Brian, is you got to produce bushels. And yes, you have to know what to do with them, and the marketing piece is big, but we've got to produce more bushels, and that's why we're talking about our three pre strategy for soybeans. We're starting to hear around the country in almost every area where soybeans are being grown. If you talk to university experts or industry experts now, we've got to get multiple modes of action out pre-emergent soybeans, and you were making the comment before, make sure they're effective modes of action as well.
Yeah, and when you say around the country, this is the United States and Canada. This is a big deal anywhere soybeans are grown. We just don't have real great options post-emerge now that Roundup isn't working so well. So we have some options, but they're limited. You got to get them sprayed very timely. Weeds have to be small, all that type of thing. So the more weeds you can get under control pre-emerge, typically the better off you are. And a lot of times it doesn't cost much. In fact, it costs less to get another effective mode of action pre than it does to get another effective mode of action post. So, yep, we're talking multiple modes of action. But again, the key word is effective modes of action.
And we'll be taking your questions as well, radio@agphd.com, or find us on social media at AgPhD Media. Stay tuned.
White mold, sudden death syndrome, root rot. If you raise soybeans, it may seem like you have all the cards stacked against you when it comes to disease. But did you know there is a new cost-effective seed treatment which can help prevent all three? Heads Up Seed Treatment offers a new proactive approach for dealing with fungal and bacterial diseases. Compatible with other seed treatments, hedge your bet against disease this spring. Ask your dealer for Heads Up today. To locate a dealer, visit headsupst.com.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Tired of having to babysit your grain bins, waiting to manually turn on fans until the weather's just right? Have you ever kicked yourself for losing an opportunity to better manage your stored grain? Operating the fans on your bins just got a lot easier with the Steps GMS app. The Steps GMS temperature humidity switch is a low-cost solution that allows you to operate bin fans according to your specifications. For more information, find us on Twitter at StepsGMS or visit us at StepsGMS.com.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? The Soil Warrior can reduce trips across the field, optimize nutrient placement, and improve soil health. So you can lower production costs without losing yield. See what makes the Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
Tired of that old warped poly boom ruining your spray applications? Express Boom from Hypro is a fully assembled stainless steel boom that ensures an even application of chemicals every time. Don't wait another season. Upgrade today. Hypro, helping you spray better.
No two seasons are the same, so you need your crops to rise ready for whatever's in store. Now, there's one simple decision that provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio offers protection against disease, insects, nematodes, and even moisture or nutrient stress. In the fight against the unpredictable, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/rise-ready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Talking pre-emerge weed control in soybeans on today's Ag PhD radio program. Thanks for joining us. I'm broadcasting from the Morton studio today. Taking your questions today via email radio@agphd.com. You can find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Brian Hefty, or Darren Hefty. Got Jason Snell with us right now with Syngenta. Jason, how's it going today?
Not too bad. How are you guys?
We're doing well. We're doing well. Unfortunately, for a lot of guys in your territory, they didn't get their fall tillage done, and a lot of stuff's going to happen next spring. Going into soybeans, coming out of some of these corn stalks, what should guys be expecting, and how should they start off the weed control program?
That's an excellent question. I think it is going to be a challenge from the climatic conditions we were dealt this fall. I think the importance of a good soybean pre-emerge is even more so this year with the tillage that we will not get done maybe until the spring. But a stout pre-emerge on soybeans with multiple effective modes of action, that's really the best time to get those other modes of action out there on soybeans is in the pre-emerge pass can really set you up with your best foot forward for the season.
We were just talking about it a little bit about if you've got some heavy corn stalk residue to deal with in the spring, my strategy would be go with your heavy pass first, then put your pre on, and then come with a finishing pass after that. What would be some cautions you'd have if this was the strategy that we ended up running with?
Yeah, absolutely. If you did your heavy pass afterwards, or even your light pass was a little too deep, you could incorporate those pre's down into that seed zone, which it's not the best situation to be in, especially if we have cooler soils. Probably pretty likely with more residue being out there next spring to have cooler, wetter soils going forward. So all that pressure can really build up. So keeping those tillage passes to incorporate it as light as you can get it to still get good incorporation, but not too deep.
You know, getting a lot of questions about different weeds and ragweed species are interesting, with giant ragweed really spreading in the upper Midwest I don't know, just a ton of questions we get on this one. It seems like every week it gets started so early in the season. Is there something different that you do with that versus common ragweed, or do you just stay the course with all these Roundup resistant weeds?
You know, there's not many areas that have to deal with both giant and common. So, and the strategies can be fairly similar. We like to use a nice rate of metribuzin. In our case, it would be in a boundary situation where it's metribuzin with dual magnum together. That's one of our better ragweed pre-emerges that we have out there. And I think, you know, another really nice option might be with this year's herbicide tolerance options we have on the market is a dicamba pass pre-emerge on those fields that are extend beans. That can be a really nice pre-emerge for the ragweed species.
Yeah, I think that's going to get used a lot this year, just looking at where we're at with tillage and just the way the fall played out. It seems like the dicamba early is going to be a big deal in these different programs. I like the metribuzin too, and I'm glad you mentioned that, Jason, because we do see that as a helper in a burn down situation in addition to the residual that we get. And guys are always curious about metribuzin. What are you doing anything different across Minnesota? I know you've got a lot of high pH ground there and certainly a lot of wet ground this year. What kind of recommendations do you make standard for metribuzin?
Yeah, that would be the trick. Is there's probably not one standard recommendation for metribuzin. We have had really good luck up to that 4 ounce rate about and on those very high pH soils. We have a boundary rate of a pint and a quarter, which gives you about 4 ounces of the metribuzin and about 2/3 or 3/4 of a pint of dual. So we like to spike that dual rate up to a full pint at least. With that, obviously we're locked into that metribuzin rate. But what we're seeing with metribuzin over past years and back in when metribuzin was used on a lot more acres, we also paired that a lot of times with corn, with atrazine in the corn in the same herbicide family. So we're kind of doubling up that mode of action, and we saw a lot more issues in the soybeans. On top of that, we're also using much higher rates, usually 8 to 12 or sometimes even more ounces of metribuzin on those acres, and we saw those big problems. So with, especially in Minnesota, where there's generally a reduced rate of atrazine, if any atrazine used at all, we feel pretty safe, even on those high pH acres, to go up to about that 4 ounce rate of metribuzin.
Yeah, it's been so effective on the weed control as well. It's been such a nice helper in the whole mix. I totally agree. Jason Snell with Syngenta, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
Thank you, guys. Have a good day.
You too. Got Dan Waldstein with us right now with BASF. And Dan, Jason was talking about metribuzin, but one thing I was thinking about, and some of these soils that didn't get worked up this fall, they're going to be no-till next year, and there's going to be quite a bit of demand for Prowl. Can you talk to us a little bit about this particular product? And we can talk about some other products too, but how do you get the most out of Prowl, and how do you dial that rate in just right too?
Yeah, so Prowl... it's a little bit unique with the group three herbicides. You can put it on no-till acres. It doesn't have to be soil incorporated like some of the other group threes out there. One of the things with Prowl that we like to see is you know, get plenty of rainfall to get that chemistry in the soil and get it activated and ready to go. But it is a good group three product that you can kind of include in your rotation there, and especially when you're looking at having additional sites of action for herbicide resistance management.
Now you talk about multiple sites of action, and Dan, you've been on this one for a long time, and there's a lot of products out there that are stacking up different sites of action, and growers will say, well, how important is it that I get three different things, and where are you seeing the big families that we should have in this pre-program?
Right. So we, we talk a lot about the group 15s, you know, and we've got a product called Zidrua Pro that's actually got three sites of action. We like to call it kind of built-in resistance management because it takes the guesswork out of having to figure out, you know, what type of cocktail mixture you need to put together to get your broad spectrum weed control and also get your herbicide resistance management. So in the case of Zidrua Pro, we've got the Zidrua, the group 15. We've got the PPO, the group 14 in there, which is the sharpened chemistry. And then we've got a group 2 chemistry, the Pursuit, And one thing we've shown a lot of our research, that Pursuit chemistry, it's been around for a while, but still does a really good job on a lot of different weeds, gives us excellent residual grass control, gives us some help on some of the large seeded broadleaves as well. And so that combination of those three chemistries has been really effective for us on the soybean acre.
You know, a lot of different things going on, and Jason had brought up earlier about there's going to be some dicamba used in both the burn down and the early post-emerge options. Can you talk to us a little bit about that when we've got dicamba-tolerant crops, where that piece fits in?
Yeah, so we, especially when we're going after a weed like mare's tail, talk about some of the no-till acres. Mare's tail is, or some people call it horse weed. It's one of the more difficult weeds that is out there. It's pretty widely resistant to glyphosate. There are some other chemistries out there, you know, like metribuzin that has shown some resistance in some areas. So with that one, we really like to see, you know, in our case, a sharpened chemistry or Verdict, and then get that growth regulator in there. So again, for dicamba, in our case, would be Ingenia. Those two chemistries together really help out. But I would say, you know, the spring applications are good for some of those weeds. But if you can, I know it's challenging because guys are trying to get the crops off the field and sometimes the weather doesn't, you know, cooperate. But fall applications of herbicides really help out a lot for weeds like mare's tail. It helps get those weeds under control. Spring, it can be more challenging.
I agree with you about the spring applications being a little tougher. The problem is fall's already passed, Dan, and you're playing the card my brother likes to play. Let's go back in time a month, Darren, and let's get those fall treatments on. I don't know how many times I've heard him say that in the last month. I'm like, Brian, you can't do that. We're just talking spring here. So, Dan, I'm calling you out on that one. We're not going with the fall treatment yet.
Yeah.
We'll bring you back on in September, and we can talk about that one. Dan Waldstein with BASF. Right. Dan, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
All right.
You know, that dicamba in the spring, we'll talk a little bit more about that and what it's going to take this upcoming spring here to get great weed control in your soybean field. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What if you couldn't hear 70% of this commercial? You'd miss a saying that would understand talking about, which frustrating. To say the least. The same thing can happen to the nitrogen in the soil, where up to 70% of nitrogen loss occurs. Instinct and NSERF maximize your nitrogen application, so your corn will give you the max in return. Get the whole story at maxinmaxout.com.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
In 1949, Morton Buildings constructed our first machine storage building to establish our bond with the farming community. Since then, our relationship has grown, and so have our product offerings. From the smallest specialized operation to the largest agricultural enterprise, we understand the needs of your business and continue to evolve to meet industry demands. Plus, when you build a Morton building, you're backed by the strongest warranty in the business. To learn more about the Morton Advantage, visit us online at mortonbuildings.com.
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike incentive programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. You decide what's best for your operation, from pre-plant to harvest. Your retailer and FMC take care of the rest. It's really that simple. the exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing of the FMC Freedom Pass program make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. That's what we mean when we say we give you more freedom in the field. You'll experience more control and confidence, too. Generics and imitators can't promise that. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today, talking about the three pre-emerge modes of action you really need to consider for your soybean fields. We really want to get you into a good pre-emerge program because it's so difficult. When we get questions in the mid-season and growers just say, man, I got these weeds and they're 6 inches tall, they're 12 inches tall. Boy, there's a lot of times we just don't have good answers for you. And oftentimes we end up in a pretty tough spot there. So we don't want to get there. We'd prefer to be up front. And we just had Dan Waldstein on with BASF. And Dan played the fall card, and I agree. Brian plays that too, that, man, if we just get some weed control out there in the fall, it's so much easier in the spring. So I'm going to beat you to the punch. We got Trevor Israel with Valent on. Trevor, don't play that fall card on me. I know we should have got some stuff done in the fall, but we didn't. So here we are going into the spring. What do we do now?
Okay, well, you said it, yeah, to start with the fall would be a good option. Now everything's, you know, such a late harvest. A lot of folks really aren't looking at that option. But in the spring, like you said, get as many modes of action out there as you can to really control some of those weeds, dealing with a lot of issues of, you know, resistance out there in a lot of different parts of the country, pig weeds, Palmer amaranth and water hemp and other weeds as well. The multiple modes of action is really going to keep give you the best shot of keeping those weeds at bay and really helping out any post applications to really get those weeds at a manageable size for your post applications. So in the spring, we're looking at a product like Fierce or Fierce MTZ. We've got a Group 14 and a Group 15 in Fierce, and with the Fierce MTZ, we add a Metribuzin Group 5. So three effective modes of action on troublesome weeds. Really get out there and try and keep those weeds at bay to really set you up for success in the season.
You know, I remember it doesn't seem like that many years ago that we were using Straight Valor, and that was our pre-emerge program. It did a pretty nice job. We had Roundup to clean everything up, and life was pretty easy. Now, you talk about Fierce, adding a Group 15 in with the Valor. We've seen that considerably heat things up in terms of weed control and so forth. What's the big difference there? Why do those two seem to be synergistic for you?
Well, the rate structure for that particular product, you've got both the flumioxazin and the pyroxysulfone in that product. And, you know, as those products are in the field, as they're active, biologically active in the field, that both will be damaging to weed seeds germinating at those rates. So as you're out in the field, you get that in the spring, you know, throughout the growing season, of course, with your decline of the residuals, as all residuals do in the growing season, just from biological activity, you still maintain that lethal dose for a long period of time. So as both those active ingredients are kind of declining, you can, the activity of them together is still going to be lethal to germinating weeds. So that's the reason we see a lot of, you know, you'd say synergistic or, you know, just kind of very positive benefits for weed control from that type of product.
You know, when we're talking about all the different modes of action that can be used pre, we got into the group threes just a little bit ago, thinking about Prowl or even a Trifluralin or a Sonalan product. If a guy wanted to do light tillage, what's your recommendation on a product like Valor or Fierce? If we're scratching the surface a little bit, working them in an inch or two deep, is that a big problem, or do you have any caution words for farmers?
Very, very light tillage. If you could possibly get by with, you know, maybe a roller or a basket roller, you know, there's a lot of different implements out there, but anything, as long as you're not overturning the soil and really creating a lot of soil movement. Of course, a good rain is going to help with that as well. Anytime you have a good rain afterwards, it's really going to help out if you moved a lot of soil, or you know, if you have fortunate enough to have irrigation to activate some of those some of that chemistry in there, that would be beneficial as well. But anything, as long as you're not overturning the soil, a little disturbance is not going to be the end of the world.
Yep, I agree. We've done some light tillage with ours over the years too, and I know this is one of those years where a lot of that tillage work didn't get done in the fall that guys wanted to do. That we're certainly going to see some spring till on a lot of the pre-emerge treatments. Been talking with Trevor Israel with Valent. Trevor, thank you so much. We really appreciate having you on. Brian, Trevor brought up something that I thought was interesting. When we think about residuals and length of control, when I talk to farmers, their expectation is, well, I want season-long control. What do I need to do if I just don't want to have any weeds come back later in the season?
Well, whenever we talk about weed control, I shouldn't say all the time, but most of the time when we talk about weed control, herbicide is not the first choice. We got to think about the cultural practices. How are we fertilizing? How are we planting the crop? What's our row spacing? How thick are these plants? How quickly can we get them tall? Are we using plant growth hormones to enhance the height or enhance the early vigor, the early emergence, all those kind of things? Because the best weed killer is not a herbicide. The best weed killer is crop canopy. And yeah, if we can get that done, then all of a sudden it looks like, oh, my herbicide lasted season long. So I've fallen into that trap too, thinking my herbicide is actually better than it is. But in reality, I had done at least a halfway decent job of raising a good crop. I had crop canopy. There were no weeds coming, so I just assumed all the herbicides got to be doing the job. It was really the crop.
We see it when we get pre's out there and then all of a sudden it rains. And now it's a few weeks before we can get back in the field. And the pre really does a really nice job, but it doesn't keep things perfectly clean forever.
See, where I see it, Darren, is whenever we have, let's say, a skip, we have where our guys ran out of seed and they say, it's a few feet to the end of the field. So you've got a row that's missing for a few feet. Whenever we have hail, when we have a drown out spot, when a deer lays down or comes along and eats in a spot in a field, and when there's no canopy, all of a sudden there's a weed disaster. And you go, what happened here? Did we miss herbicide? No, your herbicide worked just fine. Herbicides don't last forever. There are none of them that are going to actually control weeds season long. Now, there might still be herbicide there season long, but it's not enough to control every single weed in the field. So, you know, the other side of this is keeping weeds from going to seed. Where we've had our worst problems with herbicides in the past is where we have the highest pressure. So I want you to think about on your farm, what are my weediest fields? And take it one step further. What are the weediest areas in fields? So we've talked about this occasionally on the show too. We go around our field borders, just the outside few rows. So we're not spending much money. But we go around our field borders. And this is a tip I picked up from a great farmer about 25 years ago. This is what he did. And I go, wow, that's actually a great idea. Because I think about our fields, they're clean for a long time, except for those field borders. So why don't we just spend the money in the field borders? Then we can delay our herbicide application longer. So now we have better late season weed control, and that's worked out fantastically well. We've been doing that for almost 25 years now. Yeah, it's a little bit of work, but to just do the outside four rows, eight rows, whatever, I mean, we sail along, and we're not talking a lot of total tank loads of herbicide, but boy, that really makes a difference too as an early post-treatment. So what this great farmer did 25 years ago, he'd actually go off-label, super high pre-emerge rates, and I basically modified his plan because I said, well, I can't do stuff off-label and I don't want to hurt the crop or anything like that, so I'm just going to make a separate trip and do it early post. But anyway, where I'm going with all this is there are many other things we can do rather than just picking a herbicide that we think is going to last season long. But we do want to try to find multiple effective modes of action. Two is great. If you can get to two at least, that's great. But the ultimate in my book is three effective modes of action pre. Now, if you could do the same thing post or anytime, that's great. But pre-emerging soybeans, we've got those three that we really like. Either we're talking one of the yellows, Trifluralin, Prowl, or Sonalan, plus Metribuzin, plus a PPO, either Valor or Authority. So if you pick one of each of those three categories and you apply that on your farm in front of soybeans, you usually can get 99.9% control of most Roundup resistant weeds. It's great.
And if we get them before they pop out of the ground, so much easier, and you got a chance for better yields too. We'll be right back after this.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
This is a demonstration.
This is a demonstration.
Of what it's like,
of what it's like,
of what it's like,
what it's like
to maximize your nitrogen, with instinct, and NSERV.
Instinct and NSERV nitrogen stabilizers work like an echo, but instead of your voice coming back to you, you get cash back, an extra $21 per acre on average. So don't just stabilize nitrogen, maximize it, and your corn will give you the max in return. Learn more at maxinmaxout.com.
In order to be the best farmer you can be, you've got to have a grain marketing plan. But what do you do when you're too busy out in the fields trying to maximize yield? Hi, I'm Darren Hefty. My brother Brian and I are always busy learning more about how to make our farm more successful. That's why we use Grain PhD to learn more about grain marketing and to work with our Grain PhD risk expert to create a complete grain marketing strategy. Visit grainphd.com to learn more about a free consultation for your operation.
Bean growers continue to see yield loss from white mold across the Midwest this season. To maximize next year's crop, a white mold prevention strategy that includes Contans WG soil fungicide is a must for your farming operation. Applying Contans this fall to reduce the sclerotia in the soil is the most effective way to stop white mold at its source. Go to whitemoldcontrol.com to learn more about the Contans No Risk Guarantee. Start a Contans white mold control strategy this fall or pay for it later in lost yield.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
BASF presents 5 Things to Do After Harvest. Number 5, feel what it's like to not have boots on your feet. Number 4, remember that your daughter is in 3rd grade, not 4th. Number 3, get the hum of the grain dryer out of your head. Number 2, eat breakfast while sitting down. And number 1, analyze your results and plan for next year. From all of us at BASF to growers everywhere, thanks for all your hard work during Harvest 18. Grow smart with BASF. We create chemistry.
Hey everybody, come on in. The Ag PhD mailbag is about to begin.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today, and it is time for the Ag PhD mailbag.
All right, we had 4 different questions come in on weeds, so I want to get to all of them here. Let's start with this one. It is from Dan, who asks, This is why Darren usually reads the questions. What do I use to rid my pasture of both sweet ferns and bracken ferns, and when should I use it? Okay, so with ferns, they can be toxic to cattle. I totally understand why you want to get rid of them. Typically, when we have these woody species, we're talking about chaparral. And chaparral is a combination of ally and milestone. So they both have very long residual in the soil, so you have to make sure that you're not taking this out and putting it to a broadleaf crop next year or something like that. But as long as it's going to be long-term pasture, chaparral would be our choice. Go ahead, Darren. You can read the next one.
Oh, This one comes from Brian, and he said, prostrate vervain likes wet soil? You said something about drainage and calcium and soil porosity, but didn't specify if prostrate vervain likes wet soil or not.
Yeah, prostrate vervain likes wet soil. Now, it can survive in a little bit drier soil, too.
Oh, yeah, it can grow in sidewalk cracks.
Yep.
I mean, it's one of those weeds that it needs an opportunity where you don't have great crop canopy.
Yes, and that's really the whole thing. So when we start talking about, as soon as you hear the word prostrate, then right away you're thinking it's low to the ground. So that immediately, for me, gets me thinking, hey, if I just have decent crop canopy, I got this thing under control, no problem. I don't even need to spend money on the herbicide. So it is typically in areas that end up being poorly drained. So then the crop has gotten stunted and you don't have canopy. That's why it shows up. So that's why some people will say, oh, it appears like it just loves wet soil. No, what it loves is getting sunlight. And it gets that in these areas that are where we don't have good growth of the crop. So anyway, yeah, it can grow in wet or dry.
All right, thanks for the question. Get one here. This is an interesting one too. This one's from Rolando. He said, I've got a small farm. I've got sheep and goats. I am in Louisiana. I've got Bermuda grass. And a couple of years ago, I purchased some hay bales. And unfortunately, it contained some weeds in them. And now my property is invaded with Florida puzzly. I've tried cutting it low and it hasn't helped. I'd appreciate any help to help get rid of this particular weed.
My favorite herbicide now in pasture, when I start talking about weeds like Florida puzzly, is Distinct. Now, if we're after these woody species, again, we talk chaparral. If we're after perennials, you know, maybe like thistles, milestone, something like that. But Distinct is the answer there. That's probably what I would do. In terms of worrying about damage to the grass, you know what? Any herbicide can damage any crop, including grass. But Distinct will probably ding up your grass maybe just a little bit, but generally speaking, the grass recovers just fine because we're talking about perennial Bermuda grass, so I'm really not that concerned. Another one where I'm going to give you the answer of Distinct, Darren, is this question from Bob in Rhode Island. He said, I've got a weed, and some people are telling me it's carpet weed. Others say it's bouncing bet, soapwort, or white campion, which is white cockle. Do you have a herbicide to take care of these? Well, Bob, you've got several different things there, but let me just say again, in answer to the last question as well, I really like Distinct. That's pretty good on a lot of different species. It's got two different modes of action. It's got some dicamba in there, and the main weed killer is diflufenzapyr in there. So two different modes of action, both pretty effective on those weeds that you listed, annuals or biennials, and we should really be in pretty good shape.
All right. Get one here. This is.
One other thing I forgot to mention. That's if it's pasture. So if it's not pasture, then send us an email back and let us know what crop you're talking about. I just assumed we were talking pasture here, but if it is some other crop, then I got to know that. You could use like Status. It's the same thing as Distinct, just Status has a corn safener. You could use Status. That would be our choice in corn, but. You know, I don't know what crop you have. So Distinct is my choice for pasture, but send us an email if it's something else.
Okay. Get one from Otho here. He said, you recently answered one of my questions about a weed problem that I had, and I appreciate that. But I wanted to ask you why you don't address the climate change issue and global warming, as that seems to be a big factor today.
Our job is to be agronomists and help you deal with help you control what you can control on your farm. We don't want you to worry about climate change. We don't want you to have to worry about the grain markets or the weather or some of these other things so much that it keeps you away from doing your task at hand today. Is there anything that I can do today that is going to make me more money than focusing on my farm in a specific task on my farm? Probably not. So I'm not here to speculate. I'm not a scientist that studied global warming or climate change or any of this stuff. So it's not our area of expertise, and that is the reason why we do not talk about it.
All right. Thanks for the question. We appreciate it. We got one here from Bill.
Sorry. Let me throw one other comment in there. I love all these people that talk about global warming, and our temperature this morning was zero. And that's not zero Celsius.
We're hoping
that's
for the global warming here soon. Yes.
Well, in a we're joking around, of course. But I'm just trying to say, you know, if you really think global warming has changed that stuff that much, it was 0 degrees Fahrenheit here this morning. I would say global warming has not occurred.
Well, and regardless of all of that, again, we're just focused on what we can control. And I know there's lots of little things we can do to change our footprint in the planet, and we're certainly trying to do the right things there as well.
Hey, yeah, that you know that does get me thinking about doing the right thing for the environment, though, Darren. And it's something we talk about all the time here at Ag PhD. We want you
something we talk about on a daily basis for our farm as well.
Absolutely. We want you and us to do a better job getting more yield. We want you to make more money. But at the same time, we want you to improve your land, improve the water, make improvements. I believe that's why we were put here on Earth, is to help people make improvements with things, not to conserve, not to sustain. I hate those words in agriculture. They make zero sense to me in agriculture. Our job is to improve things. We're trying to make it better, not keep it the same, not turn it back into what it was in the early 1900s. We're here to try to make it better, and we can. There's so many great things we're doing now, and I'm really excited. Also, the good thing with that is when we do those things, then when you look at what supposedly helps us with the climate change thing, that really does help too. So when we start producing a lot more crop, that creates a lot more oxygen. I mean, these are all good things for us.
Brian, Bill in Southeast Nebraska had a question for us, and it was about aflatoxin, and he was talking about it towards the end of the growing season. And he had another follow-up question about, what about if you're putting corn that has a level of aflatoxin into a grain bag? Can you choke aflatoxin out by cutting off oxygen, you know, by putting it in a bag and sealing it up? And part of his question, too, is he didn't like our response that we would need to dry the corn down to 15% or less. He said, what if we put it in wet at 17? And one of the big things, Bill, is that if you do a little reading on aflatoxin, having more moisture is often one of those triggers that allows it to spread a little bit more. And if we can get that grain drier, preferably if you're going to store it longer, maybe down around 13% or less, you're going to see less aflatoxin. Now, you're concerned about losing grain by over drying the grain. I'm more concerned about, will you be able to sell the grain at all? To me, if I've got aflatoxin, I want to dry it down as far as I can, and I want to get rid of it as quick as I can and get it used up in a positive way. So, yeah, ethanol plants are tough because as they're processing grain that's got aflatoxin, the aflatoxin can get concentrated in the DDGs. So you're almost better off going to a livestock producer, preferably a cattle producer, that can feed the grain whole. I've got a friend that farms down in the state of Texas, and he had some aflatoxin in his grain this year and ended up hauling it right to a livestock producer who was buying a whole bunch of grain.
And he just blended
it down. Yeah, he could handle a certain tolerance level with his livestock herd, and it was much better than if you end up with a concentrated feed source like DDGs. The aflatoxin becomes pretty tough to deal with that way. Thanks for the question, Bill. We really appreciate that. Thanks to everyone who sent in questions today. If you've got a question, again, you can send it to us, radio@agphd.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.